So I meant to have this in your seat and I just forgot. This is what happens when the interns are gone. Listen to me very closely. I got to get all of your attention. Hey, let me get your attention. I passed out Beach Freak forms. If you are 18 years or over, you can't use this form. You have to use an adult form. If you are seven, and that is by, if you are 18 years or over, anytime before June the 24th. Listen closely because I'm going to give you some super important facts. If you've already filled out the long application as an adult, you don't have to fill it out again. All you have to do is fill out one form. The forms have to be notarized. Listen to what I'm about to say because you're going to be like, oh, I don't know. They have to be notarized, which means what a notary is doing is he or she is signing that they watched you sign the form. So if you sign it and take it to a notary, they're going to say, this doesn't work. So it has to be notarized, which means an official human being called a notary, notary public, watched you sign the form. So don't sign the bottom of the form. If you are going to be 18 years old or older, by June the 24th, you have to do a big application with references, and you have to do an adult hold harmless. This is called a minor hold harmless and media release, which means if we take your picture, you've given us permission, put it on the website. So, and you're not going to make any money off of it when we make millions from your picture. That's all it means. Hate that for you. Everybody got it? So if you have any questions, if you are over 18, Hannah Elise Redig is going to stand at the back door on the way out unless she's praying with somebody. And in that case, Rachel is going to be standing at the door. Grab one of those. Also, if you say, Pastor Jeremy, I lost it, like half of you will, they're online, beachfreakonline.com. You can download them there. Minors, you only have one thing to fill out. This is all you need. If your parents say, what the heck is Beach Freak? You say, as a matter of fact, I have some facts. We also have a website, beachfreakonline.com. I just want to tell you, listen to me closely what I'm about to say. This isn't against anybody in this room, but I will tell you this. There are things that last forever, eternity, and there are things that last a short amount of time. When you give your entire summer to a sport or to an extracurricular activity, and they take all of your time, and you learn how to play the trumpet better, that's awesome. Or you learn how to cheer better, amazing. Or you learn how to catch a football better. Or you learn how to twirl, great. But that's not gonna last forever. What is gonna last forever is your soul. So if you can make it to Beach Freak, I'm just gonna tell you there are things that are eternal, and there are things that aren't eternal. When I was, I'm going to tell you a story real quick. When I was in high school, I was playing for the number one team in the state of Alabama, baseball team in 5A baseball. At the time, all we did was go to 6A. 6A was Vestavia Hills for a billion years. 5A baseball, the best team in the state my senior year was my team. My junior year, my coach told us, you don't have permission to ever miss practice, period. So I never missed practice ever, 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 except on Wednesday nights at 6:30 p.m. I would go to my coach and I would say, Coach, I have to go to church. And he said, I understand, but everybody here is going to be staying while you're at church and they're going to be practicing. And I said to my coach, I do understand. And if that affects my playing time, that's the decision that I've made. And he said, okay. So I did that and I was consistent all year long. And I just want to tell you, this isn't any type of bragging. I just was a good kid, you know? I didn't get in trouble. I didn't get in fights. Speaking of fights, some of you guys got in fights. Apparently that sixth grade group, all y'all getting fights. I didn't cuss. I remember, it just wasn't my thing. I tried to live like Jesus best I could. So my senior year, I had lived it out. It had cost me playing time. It had cost me. My senior year, we were at our first Wednesday night practice, and I went up to coach at the beginning of practice, and I said, Coach, you know I got to leave at 6 o'clock, 6:30, whenever it was, 6:30. He said, I know you do, Sims. Back then I was Sims. I know you do, Sims. It's all right. So at 6:15, Look, my baseball team, I don't think my coach, we just practiced forever. We practiced at 8 or 9 o'clock some nights. He just didn't care. We were just going to practice hard. So we'd get there at 3:30, go to 8. Something happened that first Wednesday night practice at 6:15, my coach said, all right, everybody up. And I just assumed we were getting ready to do the next thing. Everybody up. We all got in a circle. He said, everybody get a knee. I thought, get a knee. So we got down on a knee. He said, all right, I want you guys out here tomorrow at 3:30. Be come out here ready to play. And I thought, the heck is going on? He said, all you kids that don't go to church, y'all go to church with Sims tonight. We're out. And we all left. And he did that for the rest of the school year. He dismissed us at 6:15 and told them all to go to church with me. I just want you to know, it's complicated. I get it, it's complicated. But we just can't let things that are important but not essential take all of our time. There's something that happens at camp that is unexplainable, and there's something that goes on in here. And I don't want to say that it's more important than the other things that you have planned, but it's more important than the other things that you have planned. It's important. So, I'm sorry if there's something you have to do. You're never going to get any guilt from me. Well, that story wasn't a guilt trip. The story was to tell you this. If you'll take a stand, you'll be surprised how often things don't work out for you for a little while, and then things work out for the better in the long run. It does happen still. One more short story. I told, I started coaching at the Alabaster City, and we got rained out one night, and they planned our makeup game on a Wednesday. And I called the guy. I said, why are we playing on a Wednesday? Like, this is the city of Alabaster. He said, sorry, that's when makeup games are. I said, well, I'm not going to be there, and neither are my kids, because we go to church, and you know I'm a pastor. Like, you know that. We've talked about this. And he said, let me see what I can do. And he changed our game makeup day, and he told me, he said, I won't ever put you on a Wednesday or Sunday ever again, like your whole team. So, like, if you'll make a stand, it matters to people. When we don't make a stand, everything else takes our time. They will take it, and they'll claim it until you take it back. Take back your Jesus time. Stop missing church because of stuff that you're doing on Wednesday nights. Stop missing church because of stuff you're doing on Sunday mornings. Stop missing camps and things that you could do during the summer because your coach tells you, too bad, you got to be up here and practice one day this week. Forget that. So, I didn't miss out. I didn't not go to anything. I did not play a sport or play. I played in the band. I played a sport. I did all that stuff. I didn't miss any of that stuff. But I did make a stand in some places that it mattered. So now that it's a little heavier in this room, let me get heavier. Huh. So we're in the last sermon of this series called Shameless. Just trying to get rid of shame. It's a powerful emotion that every single one of us face all of the time, just on a regular basis. We're inundated with these shamers. Sometimes shamers are unintentional. Sometimes shamers are intentional. Sometimes somebody says something to us and they don't realize that it hurts our feelings. I've done that so many times. I've said something to somebody and like a year later, they came up to me and said, man, I just want you to know you really hurt my feelings when you said that. And I said, I didn't even mean that. I didn't even mean what I didn't. That wasn't even the way that I meant it. Why didn't you come say something to me? I would apologize. Then there are other times that I have meant it. It's just a jerk. And there are times that people have meant it toward me. I told you the story last week about my teacher at school that I was just acting the fool. And he said, we don't act like idiots down here. Remember that? So there are people that shame us, and we feel shame explicitly, which means we feel it and somebody intends on doing it, but we also feel shame implicitly. We feel it in ways that we don't even realize that we feel bad about it. Like it's not even a conscious, it's almost a subconscious, almost a subliminal thing. I didn't even know that I felt bad about that. Happens a lot of times when we're talking about our image. I remember I was in high school. I was a senior in high school. And I was played baseball, and I wasn't a power hitter, but one day, this girl that I thought was by far the prettiest girl in the whole school, I started talking to her. which do we still do that? Like I was talking to her, like we weren't dating, we weren't boyfriend and girlfriend, we weren't any of that stuff, but I was just talking to her, which meant, I think it meant she, that I liked her and she liked me and we liked hanging out together. That's kind of what talking to, is that still what talking to means? I keep up with all this stuff. Freaking Urban Dictionary. So anyway, we were talking and she came to my baseball game, the only one she ever came to. She came to one baseball game. And I just so happened, I didn't hit a home run in my entire high school career. Just so happened, I drilled one over the fence. Ta-bing! And I hit it over the fence. And I was just like, perfect timing. She didn't know anything about baseball. She didn't care. But I remember I was running around the bases. And they called me. For some reason, they said, and that's a home run from Jimmy Sims. And they called me by my, that ain't my name. My name ain't Jimmy Sims. My name's Jeremy Sims. And so I got called Jimmy Sims. And then as I'm making my way around, I was really thin. I'm pretty thin now, but I was super thin when I was in high school. I was like 140 pounds and the same height, which is pretty thin. I mean, I was just skinny. You look at my high school yearbook, I was a skinny kid. And I remember the girl saying, "Oh, Slim Jim Sims, hit it out of the park." That was the girl that I liked. And she was laughing as I was going. I hit a home run. Like, I was a hero for a second and a zero for the rest of the time. And all I could think about as I was running around the base, I was like, heck yeah. And then I hear, "Oh, Slim Jim Sims." And I went, it's like the highlight of my life. Hit a home run. And then she killed me. She sabotaged me and stabbed me in the heart. And I don't even think she meant it. Like, she didn't mean to say, "You're so skinny that everybody thinks you're ugly." That wasn't the way she said it, but somehow that's what I heard. How often does it happen when we hear something, somebody says something about the way we look, somebody says something about our personality, somebody says something about the way that we laugh? How many of you have a laugh that, like, you have to bring, you're scared that people are going to make fun of it, so you don't? So how many of you have ever worked on your laugh? Anybody ever legit worked on your laugh? Like, you're just like, "I don't want to, I can't laugh the way I want to." Sometimes I'll belt it out. I'll just be like, "Ah!" And I just laugh. I can't help it. It just comes out. And then I'll hear like 9 other people in like other parts. People don't even know me, just go, "Ah!" And I go, "Really? Like, you don't even know me. I'm having the best time of my life." So sometimes people just make fun of us. They make fun of us because of our names. They make fun of us because of our, man, I used to love, I don't know what it was, but man, I just love making nicknames for people. And it would always come out. But every once in a while, there would be just a nickname that wasn't worth nicknaming. Like, I went to school with a girl, her last name was Sidebottom. I was like, "How are you going to nickname Sidebottom?" That just, and so people would make fun of her. How do you get, like, they're just, we just get, like, if you can think of it, people make fun of it. Anybody ever come to school and you had a hair out of place and somebody just drilled you? There was always that guy, always that girl. "Oh, did you wake up late today?" Always somebody like that. And what it does is it just puts this shame on us. And what shame is, I want to remind you what it is. What shame is when we begin, it's this intense, powerful emotion that makes us feel bad about ourselves for who we are. Not for what we did. It's not about behavior. It's about person. It's not about action. It's about image. And so shame is this fear of being unaccepted. I'm not going to be accepted. I'm not going to be loved. We have this deep desire as human beings to be loved, and God put it on the inside of us. All of us deeply want to be loved and accepted and want to belong. And so a lot of times what happens is we put up these facades. We put on these masks and we don't become who we truly are because we expend enormous amounts of effort and enormous amounts of energy portraying a person that we assume other people want us to be. People don't want me to have a goofy, crazy laugh, so I adjust my laugh. People think that I look too skinny, so I start taking protein powder and working out and whatever I gotta do. People don't like my hairdo. I remember goatees were in for a little while. And I was like, "I'm going to wear a goatee." They're in. I just, whatever was in, I was going to wear, I was going to be, because I just didn't want to stand out. Because when we stand out, we face the possibility of being shamed, of being unaccepted. And so tonight, I just want to give you a few thoughts really quick. Actually, I have a ton of thoughts, but I want to give them to you real quick, like in the next 10 minutes, on how to get rid of shame, the best that we can, how to get rid of shame. Now, I want you to understand, I'm going to talk about shame as it comes from another person. Sometimes shame doesn't come directly from a human. It comes from just an entire culture's push to try to tell you, if you don't act like us, you're going to be unaccepted. It doesn't necessarily come from one person. It just comes from lots of people. But I want to talk tonight about how to forgive that person that shames us. Because the antidote to shame and to live a life of acceptance and love and joy is to forgive those people that shame us. So I just want to give you 5 quick thoughts about how we forgive our shamers, how we forgive the person that tells us, hey, I don't know how they act up in Alabama, but we don't act like idiots down here. The person that says to you, the person that makes fun of you, how many of you, there's a person you avoid all of the time when you go to school because you know that they're going to say something about the way you look, something about the way you talk, something about the way that you act. How many of you have a person like that? You're like, I don't even want to be around them. So how do we forgive our shamers? How do we forgive the people that make fun of us? Number one is this. You got to blame the shamer. Blame the shamer. This sounds counterintuitive, but I just want to tell you, in order to forgive someone who has shamed you, the first thing you have to do is you have to admit that they have shamed you. You have to come to the reality and say, this person hurt me. This person said something that made me feel unaccepted or made me fear that I would be unaccepted. I don't like the way that I feel around this particular person. We have to identify our shame. We have to place blame on the person that has shamed us. We have to just admit it. I don't like the way that I feel when I'm around this person right here. Number two is this, and this is hard, but you have to give up your right to get even. You have to give up your right to get revenge. This is the part of forgiveness that we can actually put some legs to, we can put some action to, that can make some sense. I talked about forgiveness back several months ago, and I remember how we talked about people would just tell us, just let it go. Oh, you just need to let it go to forgive somebody, which doesn't even mean anything. Like, that's impossible to let something go. It's in the back of your head. So what we have to do is, when we do feel that someone is shamed or someone, I just don't like them, they're frustrated, they made me angry at them, is we have to surrender our right. You cannot forgive someone if you want to see karma or if you want to see them reap what they've sown. You have to get rid of that feeling. I remember feeling before somebody said something to me, and all I thought was, years ago I was coaching, and the other coach said something to me that was just a jerky thing to say. He was just an absolute jerk. I didn't like him. I didn't like the way I felt about me when I was around him. I didn't like the way that I didn't like who he was. He said something jerky to me. And I remember thinking to myself, I want to play him in baseball. I want to beat him so badly that we run up the score and beat him by 30 runs. That's all I could think about. So one of the things that we have to do is we have to get rid of this idea that I want to get even. I want revenge to happen. I want God to vindicate me. I want something bad to happen to that person because of the way that I felt, because of how badly I felt when I was around them. So number one, we got to identify. Number two is we've got to surrender. You've got to say, you know what? I choose not to want to get even. And it's intentional, and it's something you got to regularly choose. It's like a daily thing to happen. So that guy that says to you, you know, you come in and you look like your hair is out of place or whatever, and he says to you, oh, what the heck happened to you? Did have a bad hair day? And all of a sudden you just feel just terrible feeling. Got to give up that right to get even with him. I hope that he's walking outside tomorrow and trips and falls and somebody mows over his head with a lawnmower and his hair gets ripped. You know, whatever. Something ridiculous. Number three is this. Number three is this. You have to revise. Oh my God. I don't know why I use big words. You have to, not that it's big, just it doesn't even, forget it. You have to revise your caricature of the person you're blaming. Okay. All right. Yeah. Caricature. Yeah. So you guys have seen caricatures before, right? So a caricature is when most of the time, like if you go to Six Flags or Disney World or something like that, there's somebody that's making portraits, or they're drawing portraits of somebody, right? So a caricature is what they do is they take your face and they usually make it bigger than your body. Almost always that's how they do a caricature. But they always take one of your features and exaggerate it. And that's what a caricature is. A lot of times you'll see, like with President Obama, somebody will draw a caricature of him and they'll make his ears really big, right? Have y'all seen that before? They'll make his ears really big. Or they'll take just whatever, whoever it was, they used to take Richard Nixon. I know y'all know he was a president. They would make his nose really long. So whatever that they did, and part of the reason they made his nose is because he had a big nose. The other part of the reason was because he's a liar. So the caricature was that they were going to exaggerate a feature. Now, here's what I want you to hear. In order to forgive someone, in order to forgive a shamer, you have to revise your caricature of a person. You can't say that guy is always a jerk because that's a caricature. No one is always a jerk. Like, there's no such thing. Whenever you use these words always and never and every time, and none, whenever you use these superlative type of words, you're making your argument so much more exaggerated than it has to be. So what you have to do is you have to revise your character, and you have to actually think about what is it that this person actually did. Sometimes this person makes me feel bad. Not always. But sometimes I don't like the way that I... So you have to revise. You have to be honest. Like, let's talk about this for what it really is, for what's really happening. Number four is you have to revise your feelings. So number one, you have to blame the shamer. Number two, you have to surrender your right to get even. Number three, you revise your caricature of the person you're blaming. Number four, you have to revise your feelings. And this is tough. But you have to look for ways to feel sympathetic toward the person that has hurt you or shamed you. Because most people that shame purposefully have their own issues they're working through. We've discovered that, right? You guys know that, right? A person that's just constantly making fun of other people usually have deep insecurities. Had a friend in high school that always made fun of people. And he was grossly overweight. And I would think to myself, when is somebody going to say to him, when are they going to fire back? And so what I was able to do is if he ever made fun of me or said anything to me, somehow I was able to say, you know what? He probably feels pretty insecure. And it just worked. Somehow it worked. I don't know how it worked. And I'm not saying you can always do it, but you have to do your best to revise your feelings. Do I have the ability to step back a little bit and say, this person hurt me? But like, what's going on in their life? What are they going through? Is their life perfect? And you're going to find in junior high and high school, like that life doesn't exist, right? It just doesn't exist. And then finally, number five, this is the hardest. Finally, number five is you accept the person that made you feel unacceptable. You just look for a way to say, you look for a way to be nice. Return kindness with, return unkindness with kindness. So there's this scripture in Luke. Oh, I didn't even pray tonight. Oh, nobody even told me. Nobody even said you didn't pray, Pastor Jeremy. There's this scripture in Matthew chapter 18, verse 21 and 22. You can tell I did the bulletin tonight. It says, then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or my sister who sins against me? Up to seven times. This is what's so awesome about Peter, is he thinks that he's really going out there on a limb. He's like, should I? And the other thing is the sin that he's talking about is somebody that does the same thing to you. It's not like if somebody punches you and then they slap you and then they talk bad about you. No, it's the same thing. If I come up to Nick right here and I punch him in the face, he says, Jesus, how many times do I have to forgive Jeremy for punching me in the face? Like seven? Should I let him punch me seven times? How many are you going to take a face punch seven times? I'm not taking a face. Man, you are holier than I am. I'm not taking a face punch seven times. I'm just not going to be around that person anymore. So Nick comes up to Jesus. Did I lose you? Nick comes up to Jesus and says, how many times am I supposed to take a face punch, Jesus? Seven? And Jesus says, no, Nick. You need to take a 70 times seven. And the only point that Jesus wanted to make was, it wasn't like he was saying, start counting, and when you get to 490, when I punch him the 491st time, then he can be like, that's it. I hate you. I hate you, and I hope you burn in hell. That's not what he was saying. What he was saying is this. Jesus was saying, there's no limit on forgiveness. Because what we've learned about unforgiveness is that it hurts us. It hurts us. So, with that being said, some of you in this room tonight have been shamed by someone. And I'm going to ask you to do something really hard right now. I want you to name that person, not out loud, but name that person in your mind right now. You might even want to write it down on your piece of paper, but I want you to name it. I want you to name the person that has shamed you, that's made you feel unacceptable, that's put a fear inside of you, that doesn't allow you to be the person that you desire to be, the person that you think you're supposed to be, because you feel like you've got to put on a facade or a mask and act like this person wants you to be. And tonight, if you have that person written down, if you have that person written down on your paper or in your mind, tonight I want you to begin the process of forgiveness. So I'd like for you to close your eyes. You have to bow your heads. Tonight I want you to close your eyes, and I want to pray for you tonight, and I want to ask you a question. It's real simple. Could be your dad, could be your brother, could be your friend, could be the person sitting next to you. Could be your pastor. Can't be your pastor. Could be your pastor. But is there a person right now that you're thinking of that it's time for you to forgive? It's time for you to walk through these five steps of forgiveness and get rid of the shame in your life that you feel. The only way to let go of shame is to forgive. And so tonight, if that's you tonight, you say, Pastor Jeremy, there's somebody on my mind. I want you to lift your hand. Nobody's looking around, but lift your hand. I got somebody on my mind. Lift your hand. All right, I'm going to wait just another few seconds, and I'm going to wait for a few more of you to lift your hands, because shame affects us all. Is there somebody in your mind? You say, put your hands down. There are one or two of you in this room right now, and you're saying this in your heart. I don't want to forgive right now. I want to hold on to this. I don't want to. This person doesn't deserve forgiveness. I got news for you. Nobody deserves forgiveness. But all of us are worthy of forgiveness. Now, that's different. We don't deserve forgiveness because we acted wrong, but we're worthy of forgiveness because we're made in the image of God. No one deserves your forgiveness, but everyone that has wronged you is worthy of it because they're God image bearers. And so tonight, if that's you, if you haven't already raised your hand, you say, Pastor Jimmy, this is hard. I don't want to give forgiveness, but I understand that it's going to hurt me. It's going to make me feel shame. And I don't want to feel shame anymore. If that's you tonight, you haven't lifted your hand. I want you to lift it up. I want to pray for you tonight. Yeah? Anybody else? Yeah? Okay. Tonight, I want you to do something very brave for me. If you're in the room tonight, I'd like for everybody to stand. And I'd like for our leaders to make their way up here. If you lifted your hand for any reason, in just a second, I'm going to ask you to come up and pray, and then our discipleship team, Edge, is going to come up behind you and pray for you. But all I want you to do is come up to one of these leaders in just a little bit, and I want you to say, just mention a name. You don't just tell it to them. I just want to learn how to forgive my dad. I just want to learn how to forgive Bobby. I just want to learn how to forgive Betsy. I just want to learn. So tonight, if you lifted your hand, and there were like 20-something of you, if you lifted your hand for any reason, I'm going to invite you to come up to the altar while I begin to pray, okay? As I pray, I want you to go ahead and make your way, okay? Jesus, tonight, I'm grateful for young people. Y'all go ahead and start coming. I'm grateful for young people that listen to your word that listen to what you have to say through me and through the other ministers that preach. And they want to change and become more like Jesus. Come on, still a lot more of you need to come up, okay? Tonight I ask Jesus that as we go home, that you go with these young people and protect them. But most importantly right now, I ask that you help us to begin this forgiveness process for those that are up here right now. God, teach them to learn to forgive. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, I love you guys. I'll see y'all next week, okay? We're going to start a new series next week. Hey, let's... Rachel, oh, by the way, Rachel's going to be standing at the back. If you are 18 years or over, you need to get one of those other ones, those other forms, okay? Make sure you give your mom those forms. Your money's due May the 8th.
Turns to you. There's nothing more that I can do until you speak. Won't you speak, Lord? There's nothing more that I can do. I'm surrendered here to you. So won't you speak? And take this offering that I bring, humble as it is, I lay it at your feet. A life well lived will never be as sweet a fragrance as the death surrender brings.